Hi, I'm Marin.
Hi, I'm Holly.
And hi, I'm Deborah.
And we are the dramaturgy team that worked on Oslo. This is the largest dramaturgy team Timeline has ever had. There are three of us. And so it seemed like it might be interesting for our audiences who may or may not know what dramaturgs do, so maybe we should start a little bit with what we all did on this process to hear about it, and then hear more about how we worked together, and more particularly how we worked on a big beast of a show like Oslo. And for those of you who are either new to Timeline or new to dramaturgy, I guess we'll explain a little bit about what that means and a little bit about how we trained to do this. So if you saw Oslo, then you may have seen the information wrapped around the pillars or the backstory program book, and those are all things that we created. Or if you come to a discussion, you might see one of us there, but there's actually a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
A lot of unseen work that dramaturgs do.
Exactly. So we've been working on this production for many months at this point. We've been reading the script with the directors, with the artistic team. We've been working with actors as they've been in rehearsal and outside of rehearsal. And then we've also been writing the materials that you'll see in the backstory and around the pillars in the lobby.
And we've even been going into rehearsals and previews to give feedback on what we were seeing, things that felt right, that felt inconsistent with the historical research we'd already done, particularly when you see, say, projections or
news footage.
Right. We wanted to make sure that those pieces were authentic or felt authentic to the time period and the context and the way in which they were being used on stage.
In sort of broad strokes, the role of the dramaturg is to be a bit of a consultant on the show who looks specifically into aspects of context. Context can take lots of forms. It can be historical context. It can be context around when a play is written, if it's written in a certain time in history. For this production, it involved a lot of context around the events of the play and the people involved.
One thing we also do is sort of act as a, what I like to call, an audience surrogate. So we're very active kind of pre-production and the beginning of rehearsal, and then generally we tend to go away and look at things a little bit later on as they're more fully formed to think about what's going to be clear to an audience and what is an audience going to read in watching a certain scene or a certain theme.
I can jump in maybe and add to it. Because I think we sort of, I like to think of it as the friendly in-house critic that is watching, wants the play to succeed, but is also like watching for the thing that is like, oh, I wonder if that will make sense to people. Oh, yeah. Is that something that could be clearer in that context? Is it a matter of how those words are coming out of someone's mouth? Did somebody just miss a word? Is it a matter of, oh, did we put something in the lobby that will help explain that or in the program book? So
Right. Giving
as much information as possible, but also watching to see if that information that is in the play is coming out in a way that an audience can fully grasp.
Right, and we think about, I view it as the way that the story is being told, and if a brand new audience member is seeing what the director wants them to see and is taking what the director wants them to see. And I think we have sort of both sides of the coin to be able to figure that out. We've spent all of this time with the director, and then we're coming in and seeing it kind of as it's taking shape. That's one of my favorite parts of the job, is to think about what's going on for the audience. And a part of that is also the material that we create for the audience, the backstory in the lobby and things to supplement what you're seeing on stage. I remember saying in the first rehearsal that what people were witnessing was something they will never see again, which is a three-person dramaturgy team. Dramaturgy has a reputation for being somewhat solitary before you get into the rehearsal room. And so I've worked with one other dramaturg one time on a production, so there were two of us. This is the second time in over 10 years that I've actually had a counterpart, but to have a whole team was so special and unusual, and I think really befitting of this project and how special and unusual that is.
How do you develop and honor a play as well as real life characters? What history is it helpful to develop? Do you research the histories of both, which is what we did? When in doubt, we researched it. So it often meant that we were looking up helpful things to know about fictional characters and about real people and about real places that are themselves contested, which meant, unsurprisingly, that this project started to spiral out of control as we thought about it in the months leading up to this.
I think one of the first things we did as we sat down to talk about it was think a lot about the sources. So as a dramaturg, you're really used to being able to go back to historical records or scholars and sort of trust that this is a relatively unbiased perspective, and it is much harder to approach a subject matter as contentious as Israel and Palestine and not feel like even scholars have a perspective or a slant on the material. So we really did take to sort of just flagging, okay, this is a more Israeli perspective, this is a more Palestinian perspective, this is the author's allegiances, which was ultimately felt like the only thing we could do, but it did make it very slippery to try and pin down anything other than dates.
Yeah, I think it made it such that it almost tripled the amount of research that we had to do, because we had to look at multiple angles for every factual thing that we needed to research. The other thing I remember happening at the very beginning was that really all we generated at the start was questions, right? Just what, where, when, how, why, and then we had to sort of scatter and think about how we were going to answer all of these questions. And it's interesting to not start with information or not start with things that you feel like are fact, and to be questioning everything. I was talking to somebody last week about sort of generally what dramaturgy is, and I remember saying that I think dramaturgy is a really good creative art for people who are academically minded. And Oslo is a perfect example of how that works, and I think this team is a perfect example of how that works well together, because that's who we all are. But the lack of certainty, or the lack of sense of certainty, was really, I think, difficult and exciting for all of us.
I think it provided some good opportunities when we were able to talk to the actors, for example, in the room during the first script read, answering all of their questions, being able to talk about how when they asked a question, there are different ways of answering that question depending on what lineage of issues you want to look at or have been highlighted by a Palestinian source or by an Israeli source. And the freedom to do that in the rehearsal room is really exciting. I think the hardest part for us was figuring out how we bring that same degree of nuance and generosity and thoughtfulness to static materials that the audience would read. And we worked really hard on it, but there's always more we wish we sort of could have done to be able to provide that same balance, nuance, tension, that sort of struggling feeling that I think was part of this whole process.
Yeah, because the actors don't see everything that we see, so a lot of our job is to kind of dig through materials and pull things together and give them certain resources or a summary of resources. So having to find a way to express all of that nuance in short form, I think, was the biggest challenge.
Well, and I think the subject matter overall is a little daunting for audiences. I mean, it's one of the things I love most about the play is it suggests, no, we shouldn't wash our hands of the Middle East. Peace isn't impossible. These aren't people that are so against each other that they have nothing in common, right? Those are the kinds of goals of the play. It's hard to figure out how you take the history and the context and boil it down for an audience so that when they see a wall that has text and information on it, they're like, oh no, I can't read that. It's the Middle East anyway. They all hate each other. To sort of overcome that and give them instead a source of context that is like, oh, actually this is not what I thought it was. And then I would say the last part is that we sort of get to see the whole life cycle of the play. We do the pre-production, we go right in at the early part of rehearsal, we come in and watch it when it's coming together, and then the tail end of it is actually getting to be involved in discussions with audiences, which I think is always the most fruitful, because that's when you see sort of what are the things that did resonate with audiences. Were you right in your sort of assessments of what was needed, or how the show was shaped, or what was going to resonate with an audience? And so there's something really gratifying about being part of those conversations and extending the conversation beyond the world of the play, because we do theater to see how it resonates, to have a shared object that can bring us together so that we can discuss things in a different way. And sometimes a play like this, we might obliquely end up discussing our own political situation and the divisions there, because the play resonates for audience members because of that, and so it may go into different discussions that are not expressly about Palestine and Israel, and that's always exciting. I should add too that we had the benefit, because we had sort of dramaturgy team plus, which is that we had three consultants who could give us the benefit of, you know, again, not experts, but lived, their lived experience they could share with the cast, with us. And it took the onus off us to try and make ourselves, you know, familiar with things that are outside of our lived experiences and purview. So we had people who could talk about Palestine, who could talk about Israel, who could talk about Norway, and bring in those details of just custom and culture and linguistics foibles and drinking habits and all of those things into the rehearsal room so that it could enrich the lives of the actors, but it was one more piece that we didn't have to try and wrangle in the midst of trying to get a hold of a very slippery history.
Yeah, they were a great way to, I think, humanize all of the information that we gave, mm-hmm. and I should say that none of us have Palestinian or Israeli heritage, so having them in the room was really special, and I think the actors learned a lot from them and were really glad to have that experience. I know we all were.
Yeah, and
I was just going to add that it was also very helpful because as dramaturgs, we're really good at gleaning the bits of information that are really good for empathy and like connection and seeing all sides of something. And there is something that's really valuable, especially for this play, in understanding a degree of like righteous confidence, frustration, a feeling of like of truth, and since we don't have a lot of lived experience, I think there is no exchange for that degree of honesty and lived experience and truth that they were able to bring to the room. I'm so grateful that we had them.
I think we are skilled researchers and critical thinkers, but no amount of research or critical thinking is ever going to replace someone who devotes their life to studying these things or who actually, you know, has been and knows or grew up in a certain context. So I think that was an excellent addition to the resources that we had.
Yeah, and I would say that I think the role of cultural consultant is becoming more common, just like the way the role of dramaturg grew, and we think about that really carefully when you're trying to figure out how you do a play ethically, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're trying to reflect the lived experience of people and where all of these people lived, then there's extra sensitivity there. And if you're listening to this prior to Sunday Scholars, you actually will have the opportunity to go hear the cultural consultants on that Sunday. So if that's of interest to you, you should hear from them because it's really great to hear their perspective on the play and on the region.
My favorite time for this play, and for most plays, I think, is those first few previews where you get an audience in the room after all of this time kind of in your own head and in your own space, and you see how people are reacting to it live in real time. And inevitably, there's always some surprise in terms of what people find funny or what they find particularly touching, and I love that moment.
Do you eavesdrop? I love to eavesdrop.
I love to eavesdrop, yes.
I love to hear an audience's conversation. I feel like...
because they don't know.
Yeah, they have no idea a dramaturg is involved in the process. They don't know that you're standing...
Or that you're sitting next to them.
You're standing in the ladies' room in that really, really long line, just listening then to them talk.
I love it. It's so sneaky, but I just find it so interesting to kind of find out sort of what works for people, what doesn't work for people, what they're hearing that we may or may not have heard. Yeah, that's always super fun.
And inevitably you hear someone ask a question that you thought...
You know is answered.
That you know can be answered, but somehow isn't answered in something that you printed, and you wish that you could go back and find a way to answer it. We would love to talk somewhere about the role of women in diplomacy in Norway, and I'm sorry it isn't in any of our printed publications. We wish we could have addressed it. Please ask us about it in our talk back, and we'll find some information for you.
I think we could create the biggest informational document dramaturgy graveyard for this production. That's something I always wish I could have, of like the things that didn't get to be included. So much that we wrote that I think was so good for our learning process and for everybody's kind of edification on the team, but that will never be seen.
It would be overwhelming for any audience member.
I know one of the questions I always get asked after people figure out what a dramaturg is how did you become that? And I feel like every dramaturg has a very different path to dramaturgy. So I know mine is that I was, actually in my undergrad did literature and French, but was always doing theater. So I felt like I had that very analytic, literary, academic toolbox that I was playing from. And then after I moved to Chicago and decided I didn't want to act, but somebody told me I sounded like a dramaturg, I guess if you're the person who will be like, what's a dramaturg? And you go home and you're looking it up and you're, that you might be one. And then I actually went back to grad school expressly after having been doing dramaturgy in Chicago for a while because I felt like I needed more research and more experience and more education, which is another sign you might be a dramaturg. and it's kind of rolled out from there. And it was so much easier than acting because people just kept asking me to do it. And you don't have to audition. but I also really fell in love with it because you also work on things that you wouldn't be in. You get to advocate for stories that are not specific to somebody who looks like you in the way that an actor is kind of always has their eye out for the thing that suits them. So it means that over the years I've gotten to work on very different time periods and historical contexts and political contexts and the expansiveness of getting to be part of those worlds and research those worlds and get a toehold in that has been so valuable to me, both professionally but as a human being. I think that's why I do it.
My road was long and windy. I have an American Studies degree from my undergrad, where I focused on the American musical within American cultural context. I did no theater. I really enjoyed writing about theater and thinking about theater. I had no desire to do any of it and didn't view myself as creative. So after college, I spent some time working in literary offices and continuing to write and think about theater. I didn't know that dramaturgy was a thing. I did some educational content within the context of literary management and then did some dramaturgy that I didn't know was dramaturgy. I was sort of a research consultant on small production and just sort of kept trying to find my way. I spent a few years really wanting to be a critic, again, writing and thinking about theater. And academics told me I sounded too much like a journalist, and journalists told me I sounded too much like an academic. So I just kind of kept doing my thing and came to Chicago to go to graduate school, where I think I was closer to dramaturgy than I thought I was at the time. Studied history plays and consider myself now someone who specializes in what I like to call new classics and modern classics. Ended up staying here to work on the play that my master's thesis is on, so just a huge stroke of luck, and kind of kept picking up freelance work from there. And I really found that, although it was a long kind of spiral to the right thing, it is a way to write about theater and think about theater, and I've also always been really interested in what's going on for an audience emotionally and intellectually. So it really is the perfect fit. I found that every job is different and every play's needs are different, every director's needs are different, but finally being able to work at Timeline has been really special because of the way that history functions here and the way that historical narrative functions and that dramaturgy is such a robust part of what's done here.
My path to dramaturgy, I think, might have been a little bit more direct because I had an opportunity to go to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival when I was in my sophomore year of college. I was a history major and undergraduate, and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, OSF, it's Disneyland if you're a theater kid. It's an absolute magical place, and I got to meet their head dramaturg there. And as a theater performer and a great lover of theater and as a historian, I listened to this dramaturg talk for 45 minutes and I thought in my head, this is what dreams are made of. This is my goal. And so I continued to study history in undergrad and I did my master's in history, but I did dramaturgy in the summers. I worked for a regional theater company doing dramaturgy for them, student performances. And now I'm doing a history PhD and academia is sort of my trajectory, but to me, there is no greater way to be able to practice what I do as a professional historian, quote unquote, than to be able to do history for a performance where they have specific questions that you can use your research skills to address, ways of being able to understand how research meets someone's intellectual need in the moment and to see the result of that on stage. As an academic, being able to work on anything for 4 months and have it be done is impossible. It's a great, great joy to like start to finish something in 4 months and to see something you wrote go into print without 16 people editing it, only like five. So it's a great joy to be able to work on a show, and Timeline is such a wonderful company to work with.
Well, and I think when we think about like public humanities and the way that we interact with the world, there's something joyful about being a dramaturg and that you know that your work will be seen mm-hmm. by other people and that it's influential in a way that I remember when I was in grad school, I was like, oh yeah, way more people will read something that I write for a theater than will ever read anything I write academically. It's more influential on just if something's right on stage, if something resonates with somebody on stage because of something that I helped influence, even though you may never know that any of us worked on us and on it, and you won't recognize us on the street or when we're listening to you in the bathroom, that work is being felt.
And I would say if there's a thing you remember about dramaturgy, I feel like I have such, as a dramaturg, such tension and such a willingness to make sure that I get something right without footnotes. So if you read a paragraph that I write, there aren't any footnotes in it. It seems like it's just the truth. It's the only version you get. As a historian, that drives me batty because I have to be able to know that I can cite everything, that you know, that I know what I'm talking about, and I'm citing people who knew what they were talking about. If you read my dramaturgy or any dramaturg's dramaturgy, there are no footnotes. You have to take it. So I hope that you know that when you receive a paragraph without footnotes, in the dramaturg's Word document, which you will never see, there are many footnotes, and they do know what they're talking about, and they've thought about it very hard.
It's true. I always feel like the footnotes are my secret refuge of when somebody asks me and they want that source, if somebody's going to argue with me, I will go back to my document with the footnotes and I will bring forth these sources and the page number and you can find it. So, yeah, it's very true.
We didn't do it for this production because there was already such high volume of stuff, but sometimes what I've done is created little rehearsal room libraries that allow people to at will go and pull an entire book on a specific thing. That would have been impossible to do here. People would have just disappeared and read for months and we wouldn't have seen them. But I think there's a lot of trust that people put in us to look at resources and think hard about them and present a version of the truth or a truth. That's a great thing.
Thank you for listening to this exclusive conversation. Learn more about the show and how to get tickets at timelinetheater.com/Oslo. Oslo is now playing at Broadway in Chicago's Broadway Playhouse through October 20th, 2019.